Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good evening, sir. Come to give me a caning, sir. Would you like that, sir?
What?
Am I to gather that some practical joke has got out of hand?
I suspect alcohol has played its part in this.
I should have just enough residual awareness to let you in.
But...
Don't open it unless you...
Hold to open.
Hold to open.
Yes, and what do you do?
Those creatures would live forever to breed and conquer. Isn't it going to hurt?
Oh, yeah. It hurts.
But, in fairness, I will give you one word of advice.
Here come the drums!
Hello and welcome to Pull to Open, an ongoing quest to watch all of Doctor Who, the entire television program, in random order. I'm Pete Paschal.
And I'm John Smith. Wait a minute. Let me just look at this pocket watch. No, I'm Chris Taylor. And we have a very, very special episode of Pull to Open for you this week, because, Pete, what don't they know?
This time, there's three of us. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the podcast. Stephen Shaplansky from Radio Free Scarrow. Hello, Stephen.
Hi there. How you doing?
Good. Stephen, I understand you're in Edmonton, which you declare at the beginning of each of your podcasts.
Yes, I do. If only to mention Edmonton on a Doctor Who podcast every single week. Where back on May the 12th, 1996, a little TV station in Edmonton called ITV broadcast the world premiere of the Doctor Who TV movie 2 days before Fox.
I remember it well, yep. Because as has been mentioned on this podcast and longtime listeners will know, I am also from Edmonton.
True.
And we established before we hit record here that we don't know each other, or we didn't know each other back in the day, even though we were some of the rare species of Doctor Who fans, not as rare as you would think.
I was going to say, I've now got this image of Edmonton just being full of Doctor Who fans, it's Gallifrey 1 every day.
Yeah. We just don't know it. We're just, I played a music show last weekend in Camrose, and where I'm born, but an hour away from Edmonton. And somebody was dressed up as Doctor Who. And I said, Doctor Who. I pointed at Scarf. He says, you're the first person to get it. So, you know, we think we are numerous in number, but we're really two people from the whole of the place.
Maybe everyone's just New Who fans now.
They just like me when I was growing up. Like, let's just keep my Doctor Who fandom under wraps. Yes.
Even if you see a guy out on the street in a scarf, yeah. Do not say it. Don't admit it.
No, don't want to out him. No.
I'm sort of worried that the presence of both of you on the podcast, given the TV movie connection, is going to lead the randomizer to pick the TV movie for us to get that triple Yahtzee of the Paul McGann entry. It's
totally. So, Stephen, thanks for coming on the podcast when it's such a dull time for Doctor Who and there's nothing going on and it's just so dead. It's just really, I'm glad you're just filling your time, just doing stuff here with us.
Filling your time. Oh, no problem. Yesterday, the busiest month in Doctor Who history, it seems.
Hasn't it been crazy? There's been
eight things announced today. It's ridiculous.
It's been nuts. We'll get to some of that news in a minute.
Yes.
But
first, Pete, why don't you take the fine folks through our random adventure so far?
Previously on Pull to Open... We have been jumping around the classic series for a little while, folks. In three stories ago, we were at a First Doctor adventure called The Mythmakers, a completely lost story. But there was a doctor in the horse. He eventually left the horse. And much later for him, but for the next story for us, arrived at future Earth and the moon in the seeds of death. Well, he was on Earth first. Then he jumped to the moon. There was a lot of jumping back and forth, which was made very convenient by a little system called TMAP, which we never see again.
It was foam on Earth. It was a party.
Well, there was another party in the basement of a Sir Reginald Stiles' house, a little wine and cheese party with none other than John Pertwee as the third doctor battling some guerrillas as well as some gorillas in Day of the Daleks. But the randomizer, you know, it's always listening. It knows what's going on in the world, certainly in the world of Doctor Who. It knows a certain David Tennant is returning for the 60th anniversary special, which at this point, listener, is only 2 weeks away, and it has finally taken us back to New Who. We are at a doozy, folks. We're at Series 3, Episodes 8 and 9, Human Nature and the Family of Blood.
And I got to say, just before we go any further, that this is not just the randomizer taking us back to any Tennant. That there are a lot of reasons why this connects to the most recent stories that we've done. But also for you, listener, this pull to open is going out on November the 11th, 2023. November the 11th, Remembrance, Armistice, the Poppies. It's all here, folks. It's all here in this specific edition. So as you said, Pete, the pull to open randomizer pays attention to the world as well, and here we are in a very, very appropriate moment to discuss Human Nature.
And it's always taking us where we need to go. Indeed. Randomizer.
Stephen, had it been a while since you've seen this one?
No, because I've the lead up to the 60th anniversary, I've undergone one of my many pilgrimages, and I've been watching an episode of Doctor Who a day since June of 2021, I think it was. I was challenged by a Radio Free Scar listener to do this. I foolishly said yes, and it's
so wait a minute.
Yeah,
a story a day from including Classico,
an episode a day. Okay. So that's for the first 26 years of Doctor Who, it was fine. 25 minutes a day, that's fine. Now, once we get into the modern series, it's like, oh, I'm gonna find time to watch 71 minutes of Doctor Who for So I had watched these two relatively recently. I did watch them again for this as well. And I think the Tennant years. Before I started podcasting a lot with Radio Free Scar, I find that those first 3 or 4 years of RTD, I watched a lot more. And since then, I don't watch them as much. And it upsets me that I haven't committed them to memory as much as I have. But I feel like the series 3 and series 4 are very familiar to me. So I watched it very. It was a comforting warm blanket. This harrowing tale of humanity and war.
Indeed.
Nice. Yes. We appreciate your professionalism for not going to just completely from memory on this and getting them fresh in your head.
Right. Well, I mean, if I was on for Day of the Daleks, I might have just winged it because I've seen that a billion times.
All committed to memory, all lock safe up here. Yes, we should also say series 3 kind of comforting to the randomizer as well. We've already been to the two stories that follow this, Blink and the Master Trilogy, as we've called it, Utopia, Sanodrums, Last of the Time Lords. Pete, have we been anywhere else since season 3? Is it just sort of throwing us everything at the end?
With Martha, I feel like
We did do Runaway Bride, but
let me check it out. I have to check the codex.
It's one of those things.
This is the third one we've done of proper series 3.
Wow.
Series 3, season 3, we're going to get all screwed up on that pretty soon. Cause
we are.
This is total randomizer behavior to just sort of bunch up the ones it's giving us at the end of the season. Like, what's the deal?
Yeah.
They seem to be going backwards. Thanks, randomizer.
Well, before we get into it, folks, I want to just let everyone know, if you want to cut straight to our three-way commentary on Human Nature and the Family of Blood, please check the show notes. Go ahead and look in there. There's going to be a time code that you can go to if you just want to jump to that. If you're on YouTube, scroll down. It's right under the video. You can jump right to when that commentary starts. But you're not going to want to do that, guys, because we have plenty of things coming up here. In the poll to open pulse loop.
Of course.
Fetch it, yep, David. We got our poll to open on the Seeds of Death. We got an all new emoji challenge, and we got lots and lots more. But before we get to that, Chris, where is the fun place on the internet people can go deeper on poll to
open? You can find us going deep on many more fun places than ever before. We're on the actual World Wide Web, whatever that is, at pulltoopen.net. We have a newsletter there as well. Subscribe, get our full written notes on every episode. And if you want to go even deeper than that, you can become a patron, a time lord of the show. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/pulltoopen. We've got some special stuff coming up for the specials, not just there.
Yep. But if you missed it earlier, we're going to be having some hot takes on the 60th special starting November 25th. So watch for that. And we'll have one per week, I guess, because that's how they're making it now, right? At least for a little while. That'll be good times.
And while you're waiting for that to happen, you can just pop into the reviews section of whichever app you're in, especially if it's Apple Podcasts. That will be a great way to support the show. Leave a 5-star review if you want, but definitely leave an emoji title, because that will then torture me every week. The title of a Doctor Who story that you think I might not guess, or indeed any of our guests might not guess, as your review. Would serve two masters at once, as it were. And if you want to serve three masters at once, then just share the podcast with a friend. Good go randomly stuff. Into your address book, find a random friend, send him this show. So, Pete, is it time to torture our guest and myself?
Well, it's getting about that time. I was just going to say we are here, and it is time for the emoji challenge. So normally I get to torture just one person on this, racking their brains about emojis, rather emojis that actually represent the title of a Doctor Who episode. But we didn't warn you about this, did we, Steven?
No.
You're now trapped.
That's right. That's fine. I can do it. I'm trapped in the reflection of a mirror. Every time you see someone just out of the back of your eye in a mirror, it's me trapped trying to guess what emoji mean in regards to Doctor Who.
Exactly.
Yes. Trying to look onto your phone. Yeah. Remember the emoji keyboard. What do these symbols even mean?
Right. So the emoji challenge, of course, I will say some emojis and our contestants.
Say them, oh God.
Even in Edmonton. I wish I could show them to you.
Yeah,
we'll figure out that technology someday where I can just put them on the screen. Not just
live on the podcast. It will appear live. But
print them out, hold them up to the camera, and we'll guess.
Best I can do is paste them in the chat.
Okay.
But we can do that.
I'll take
that. So here we go. This one's not too bad, I think. Okay, so are you guys ready?
Okay.
Just shout it out if you know it.
Are there buzzers, fingers on buzzers here, or are we just going to
fingers on buzzers? And as we found out, you can actually, if you want, buzz in before I'm even done.
Could do that. Yeah. Finger on sign.
Please,
okay.
Please do that. Please fall into that trap.
Okay.
All right. Here we go.
Two emojis.
Oh, boy.
First emoji, spider web.
Okay.
Second emoji, the world.
Planet of Spiders.
That isn't it? The web planet.
Web planet.
It's the web planet!
Web.
Nice work.
I mean,
Chris, you have been embarrassed by our guest. We have a new champion for the emoji challenge. It's Steven Chablansky from Radio Free Scarrow.
Wow.
He takes that title with him back to Edmonton and his own podcast.
I do want to point out, though, in the chat, dear listener, the emoji is about a nanometer in size, and it's on dark on dark. Oh, so if I would be like. So thank you for those of you listening. I just did this. So thank you for the description, Pete, because otherwise I wouldn't have got it at all.
My pleasure. We're getting pro. Very professional at this.
The irony of the fact that, I was the one who essentially buzzed in before really thinking through that it could have been two titles. Mm-hmm. That one's on me.
Yeah. I think you were fooled last week when we had the snake and it was clearly a Mara thing. You had the web and you went right for the animal. Yeah. You went for this Planet of Spiders and then Planet of Spiders. Mm. That's a different thing. Maybe you'd reverse that. Anyway, I want to thank Jack Hustwaite on Twitter for sending us that one. He's got a couple others in the can and we'll do those in a future podcast. But folks, we have so much fun bringing this podcast to you, obviously. And one of the reasons we're able to make it fun is because of the service we use to record it, and that is Zencastr. When we started out podcasting, we were really a lot like the doctor, not quite sure what we were doing with the equipment we had, but ever since we switched to Zencastr, it's been a dream. It's actually a lot like having a magic toolkit in a pocket watch, shall we say. It's that convenient. All you do is create your recording room in the cloud, send the link to your guests, and Zencastr handles the rest. It records studio quality sound and video up to 4K, plus it has all the tools you need to host, create, and distribute your podcast all in one place. Whether you have your own podcast, and I know some of you do, maybe some of our guests do, or are thinking about starting one, we would strongly encourage you to check out Zencastr. So set your browser coordinates to zencastr.com/pricing and use our code IPUSH. That's IPUSH. And you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. We want you to have the same easy experiences that we do for all of our podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Remember, the site is zencastr.com/pricing and the code is IPUSH.
Thanks, Pete. And also remember that if you're on Spotify, there are even more ways to interact with the show. You can just rate it on the app. And also you can pull up the poll from the bottom of the screen. That's right. It's poll to open. And you can decide right now, as you're listening to this, what you would rate Human Nature, Family and Blood, given our rating system, which we'll explain at the end. And we will read out those results on a future episode. The polls remain open, so it doesn't matter. Even if we've already read out the results, you can still vote. If you're in line, stay in line. And we have some ratings now for Seeds of Death. What have we got, Pete?
It's pretty it's pretty much a Dalek. The people have spoken. It's a Dalek. It's
a good episode of Doctor Who.
Yeah, it's 80% there. People are like, I'm into it. I couldn't rate it. At the time, I was like, it's a fixed point in time. It was really kind of like a so bad it's good. I just couldn't. It was just too confusing for me, I guess. And now, but there's at least
I gave it a Dalek / Lady Cassandra, a hybrid.
Yeah, yes, you did.
It was as in pretty but paper thin flot. But yeah, I guess we could say that most people agree with me. Stephen, what did you think of Seeds of Death? Your overall.
I love Seeds of Death. I remember it very fondly. Back in the day when the early '90s. When all we had was season 6 of Troughton and not even all of that. And so we had to hold on to our Troughton stories dearly before they all started return to the archives. And so I loved the Seeds of Death. I loved the music. I love Fushum's performance. Terry Scully's great in it.
Yes.
The Ice Warriors are superb. T-Bat is wonderful. And it even mentions Canada. So I think it's one of those rare Doctor Who stories. That,
you know, they misspell Ottawa in the novel.
It's Ottowa, is it?
Yeah,
I'm guessing
they do. Unless they must rename it sometime this century.
They just say everyone's going to spell it that anyway, so I'll just change
it. And that's wrong because it's an A, not an O, right?
Correct.
Okay, <Yeah. laughs> good to know. All right, so also you can find us on youtube.com/pulltoopen. That's a great place to leave the emoji title. Check out our Toy Maker plot summary there. It is absolutely winning the game. It's going crazy. Thousands of people are looking at it there. We've got a whole podcast on the Celestial Toy Maker that you can check out on YouTube. Don't forget to like, subscribe, smash that bell icon. Look at our Easter eggs in the background. Look at whatever is going on in the background of Stephen, which we do not even know right now. So that's all on YouTube. And Pete, where else can the fine folks find us?
Okay, folks, I'm talking to you right now. I'm talking to you, TikTok watcher, the person on TikTok who has been with us almost since the beginning, checking out our videos on TikTok. I got some news for you. you guys can now listen to the podcast in the app. You don't even have to go to another app. You can literally just tap on one of our shorts that we do our little shorts of the, you know, you've seen the shorts. They're little mid-long videos that have stuff on them. Tap on the little link at the bottom of the video. You can actually listen to the podcast. You can do that.
Wow. Wow.
Go right to it. Right in TikTok.
A TikTok that is hella bigger on the inside.
Are you listening to the podcast, but you haven't followed us on TikTok? Guys, we're at pull to open on TikTok. Just do it. Just open up right now. Go to TikTok. Find us there. After the podcast.
All right.
Finish this.
Yes. And on Instagram, Facebook, Threads, pull to open 63, Blue Sky, pull to open. Now, let us talk about the news of the week, because, wow, the Daleks.
Yeah.
We were just saying in our last podcast how interesting it is that nothing had been announced for the actual anniversary itself, and now here come Color Daleks.
Yeah, this has been an insane week for Doctor Who news. We're actually, this is probably coming at you a little week after or so when you first heard about it. You probably even heard about it on Radio Free Scarrow last week, where they talked about all the news, including the Tales from the TARDIS and everything else that's happened. But I mean, the big headline is that the original serial, The Daleks, is getting colorized, but also getting cut down to 75 minutes, which is like cutting out like, I don't know, an hour at least. I mean, it's a ton of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I missed that part. It's abridged.
It's abridged.
Yeah, which to me is kind of the headline. Color, great, but I'm like, yes, get a bite-sized version of these old serials where it's just like, yeah, it's actually like a movie length. What? I'm into it.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued. It's edited by Benjamin Cook. Who's right, chopped it down.
Yeah.
It's colorized by Rich Tippel and Kieran Hyman, amongst others. And I imagine, you know, colorizing 75 minutes is probably a lot easier than colorizing 725-minute episodes of it. So, like, you know, that's one thing. It's especially the last, like, 2 to 3 episodes. Like, it's great up to episode 4. Then, oh, we have to go back into the city. And it takes a long time
right.
for them to get through those caves, finally into the city, halfway through the end of episode 7. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
A little, let us not go back to the city. It is a silly place.
Yeah.
And then you've cut out an hour right there. You know, for me, this will either be a travesty or genius, depending on whether they keep the line about fresh organic vegetables. where the Dalek offers fresh organic vegetables to prisoners. Because, you know, the Daleks were hip and grooving into nutrition in those days, man.
Oh, what would be amazing is if they put the beginning of the Target story, even though that was never made, like as well, like they wrote the Target one, like it was the first episode.
Well,
right?
Listen. iPlayer can't for right now show the first Doctor Who story.
Oh, that's so right.
They might have to shoot a special intro, perhaps with Jamie Glover, who played William Russell in Adventure in Space and Time.
Right.
He could be like writing down his things. Oh, I met the Doctor on Barnes Common or something like that, because that's how the novelization started in 1965. don't be surprised if that's actually what happens on November 23rd when we see that. It'll be a special little animated intro, which will have the Barnes Common introduction to it. That would be hilarious. Right.
Yeah. Well, guys, we could go down this rabbit hole for the rest of the podcast, but at some point we do need to start talking about human nature and the family of blood, and that time is now.
I was hoping we could postpone it for a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, unfortunately, we cannot. Time marches on. And as listeners know, at the beginning of every commentary, one of us summarizes this plot of the story in record time. And this week, that is Christopher Taylor. Are you ready, sir?
Well, can I just insert a humble brag as to why I think this is going to be difficult for me this week?
Do it.
Is that I also read the novel. For the show.
Oh, you have so many rabbit holes to go down to. Oh, man.
It's so different. So I've read that more recently than I've watched the show. So if I suddenly start talking about Bernice Summerfield, then you know that I've skipped the tracks and I'm in an alternate timeline.
Well,
and that's when you have to send an instruction team.
We allocate 1 minute for every New Who episode and 5 minutes for every novelization. So that gets to 17. No.
Fantastic.
Sorry, we're just doing the TV stuff. You get 1 minute per episode. So you have a full 2 minutes to summarize this story. Are you ready?
As I ever, I'm going to use the pocket watch. And
oh, you're going to have your own timer.
The plot comes back from it, because of course we close all our tabs. We fly blind when we do this. So I'm calling on the spirit of John Smith.
Damn thing never worked anyway. Here it comes. The official pull to open summary of Human Nature and the Family of Blood in 3, 2, 1, go.
So the Doctor and Martha have been pursued into the TARDIS by someone. We don't see what, but the Doctor says they're going to pursue them forever and ever. But apparently they only last for a few months. So he smash cut to 1913, and Martha wakes up the Doctor. She's his maid. He's a teacher now in a boys' school. And this apparently is something to do with what they did to get away from this whatever it was. But it's 1913, and attitudes are different, and people are being racist to Martha. And
30
the
Doctor seconds.
Is apparently just thinks of himself as human, has no idea, has a pocket watch on the mantelpiece. Other than that, he's totally human, and he leads like officer training with machine guns for all the boys, and starts to fall in love with this woman, Joan Redfern, who's matron. She's matron. Sorry, she's something else in the book. And then there's this one boy who thinks stuff is weird and different. And he keeps getting beaten up. His name is Tim, and he steals the doctor's pocket watch. And pursuing them, it's the Family of Blood. They land on Earth. They take over locals, and they have an army of scarecrows. And they actually want the Time Lord for his genes, and that's why he's had to hide as a human. But Tim encounters them. They suck up a local schoolboy. They invade the school. One of them is a little girl with a balloon, and that gets the headmaster shot. And then there's explosions everywhere, and they march into the school, and eventually the Doctor is forced to open the pocket watch and become the Doctor again, even though he really doesn't want to. And then that's how he defeats the Family of Blood from inside of their visible spaceship. And then he has to go back and explain to Joan that he's not actually a human. He is the Doctor, and he isn't in love with her anymore. And he's got to go
and time.
And then they see Tim at a Remembrance Sunday thing many years later. And the Doctor has a poppy in his coat.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mm-hmm. With the poppy, it's 2:10, a little over.
Oh my god,
not bad though. Not bad.
I a bit of a rabbit.
How would you rate it, Steven? You miss anything?
It was overstuffed with detail at the beginning, and then really rushed towards the end. So
every TLDW almost.
Just like, I've got plenty of time. Let's describe the scene. How about? Yes. Oh, it's lovely and paintings and.
Picture, if you will, an invisible spaceship in the middle of the field. I definitely missed it. I wanted to talk about Baines, the schoolboy, because I think really just a standout performance in that. So, you know, I really don't want to take anything away from the characters, the actors I didn't mention.
I think you got the essence of it, which is, of course, the love story and the human nature of Tennant and his performance as John Smith, which is sort of the centerpiece of this whole thing. And that really works. So you got all of that. I think if there was anything that was left out that I think we should discuss, but this is probably something we'll discuss later, it's what he does to the family at the end. And we'll get to that.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to that. It's interesting that we've sort of nibbled around the edges of human nature recently, because we had our cold opens special. So we watched the cold open recently and talked about that. And what a pretty good job it does of setting us up in a record space of time. But we also had our episode on 10 times the Doctor was actually cruel or cowardly. And what he does, the Family of Blood in this, is arguably one of the cruelest and most, well, I don't think it's cowardly, but it's certainly a Time Lord victorious kind of moment.
We can do that. Do you want us to, should we start at the end? Should we just get it out of the way? So we don't.
Stephen, what are your thoughts on this, on those punishments?
I like that it's dark. You know, it's probably a few times throughout history, the Doctor's probably warranted in meeting out these, because, you know, they are seeking immortality. You know, they're basically, he's basically pulling a game of Rassilon on them and, you know, seeking them and putting them away. And I there's a certain sapphire and steel nature to some of them about, you know, the little girl being stuck in the reflection of a mirror. You know, every time there's an episode of Sapphire and Steel that's kind of based around that. I always thought, this is just me thinking of it. I've never told Paul Cornell this, I don't think, or he's never bothered to listen to me, that the scarecrow that, John Smith, when he and Joan are walking through and like, he's adjusting the scarecrow, that scarecrow's not quite right. In my mind, that scarecrow is actually, son of mine. Baines' person in, you know, in the past, because he's stuck in time essentially as a scarecrow. And I like to think that he's already there. He's been transported back in time already because he's stuck in time and he's actually adjusting him. Little does he know that he's actually going to put him there later on in that story.
I love that, especially because when we gave our challenges to the randomizer that brought us here, if you remember, Pete, I was asking for something that was timey-wimey. In the same way that Day of the Daleks was. Obviously, every Doctor Who is a little bit timey-wimey. But this not so much, but except that that's a timey-wimey outcome that's maybe headcanon or maybe buried in there. Also, the novelization, a bit more timey-wimey. They've got the barrier that protects the ship and indeed, you know, keeps the army out, keeps the army, you know, coming in and investigating what the hell's going on here. Is this very bizarre timey-wimey thing. So we should probably go back a little bit because you've introduced Paul Cornell, and we should probably just bring folks up to speed who are not familiar with the background of how this happened. So the New Adventures. You guys read the New Adventures when they came out?
I did. Well, not all of them. Actually, very few. I bought Time Worm Genesis when it came out and never really quite got through it. But I did end up getting through other books. Iceberg, I think, was the first one I really did. And then I've read about a half dozen of them, maybe a few more.
So this was renowned as one of the best. And as I may have mentioned, Russell T. Davies, in a very timey-wimey way, I did not mention that in this episode, but I may do in the future. He thought of this as one of the best books he'd ever read when he brought Paul Cornell on board to do Father's Day, and then commissioned a version of Human Nature for season three. And this was the result, and it went through many, many rewritings. Probably RTD's biggest introduction was the Scarecrows, which apparently took Paul Cornell a day to agree with. If you watch the Doctor Who Confidential that goes with this, RTD's kind of you know, gently slamming Paul a little bit. He's like, any idea I wanted, I just sort of left it with him for a day, and then, like, he would come back to me and be like, yeah, here's how I can do that, even if he disagreed with it. So
how do we like RTD's the Scarecrows
all over it? I like the Scarecrows too.
I don't know. I feel like it's a bit of a B minus for me as a monster. I mean, they look creepy. And I just think in the story, it's not super clever. I mean, they're made of straw, so it seems like, you know, they rip the arm off one and sort of shows that they are not human, and but seemingly impervious to damage. And then they're totally cut up by the machine guns, which is like, so which is it? Or can they be hurt or can't they? And they sort of conveniently are there and in numerous numbers when the script needs it, and then they sort of disappear when they're gone.
They don't get completely annihilated by the machine guns. They get knocked down, but they do get back up again.
Quite a phrase.
Had a few whiskey drinks and a few vodka drinks.
Exactly.
That part is, I think it's the crucial moment of the whole two-part story, I think, is, you know, the time when all the boys, these young boys who have been training for war, just imaginary war, you know, a hypothetical war, essentially, that they don't know that World War One is on the horizon, but they train them. And you think they're all, like, well-versed in machine gunnery and everything, and then when it comes time to actually shoot something, A lot of them do it, but they are just filled with fear and remorse and sadness. They're crying children, firing guns. And if it was into like, you know, all powerful beings and they weren't falling down, that scene would not have the impact. But the fact that they're shooting them and, to their mind, killing them, you know, there's a whole field of these dead things. They haven't seen the Scarecrow Men yet. They're just shooting at whatever's coming through the door. And the doctor is not. He's watching the reactions of these children firing at this thing, and he never fires a shot. And that's the sort of the moment when John Smith realized that, you know, I'm someone who abhors war. This is what who I am underneath. It's a crucial moment of the scene, I think, of the whole episode, I think.
Oh, I totally agree. I feel like the outcome is a little confused, though. I 100% agree with everything you said. It's a beautiful scene. It's really... Yeah. If the heart of the episode is the John Smith Jones stuff, this is a close second. It's the second. It's the other. It's got two hearts, right? It's a Time Lord episode. So this is the second heart. But the thing is, it's like they cut down these things. But then what they're tested on is the girl. The little girl comes in. And it seems like, are we actually going to ask these boys to kill a little girl? And they don't. But then that gives the family the upper hand, and then they're ready to kill everybody. So wait a minute. That's where I'm like, is the message here that was wrong? Like they were supposed to like blow the brains out of the little girl? Like, well, you know, like
they do. In the book, they do. I will mention the book is a lot more gruesome in many ways. There are heads blown off. There are, you know, there's blood splattering everywhere. The doctor loses a finger. It's brutal. And one of the things that happens is, yes, they do gun down the little girl at that point. I mean, it's sort of established before that she's not really human and she can't. Yeah. She, like her balloon, that's a vestige from the book as well. The balloon was this powerful thing that could zip around. She could control it. And I believe it had poison gas inside it or something. So she's clearly established as a threat. But yeah, the boys do have to gun her down. And by the way, before we get too far away from it, I wanted to say, we were talking about the ending and whether that was justified, what the doctor did, and where he goes all Rassilon, Stephen, and I think it feels a bit classic Who-ish. It also felt to me a little bit Mordred Undead, you know.
I was just thinking that too.
Death on these other creatures that were seeking eternal life, right? It is kind of the doctor taking.
Well, as much as I'm tempted to judge him for being cruel there, I do feel like I like the storyline or the character storyline for Tennant and the doctor. Like you just brought up Mordred Undead. I thought of the same thing. The idea that the Time Lords are torturing essentially these people who can't regenerate just to send a message, don't mess with us, and you can't have our tech, you know, whatever. But with Tennant, it's part of sort of this Time Lord victorious thing. You know, if you sort of look at Waters of Mars, that sort of makes a little more sense in the context of this arc, right? That he's just this all-powerful Time Lord, feels the responsibility of it. And maybe it's just something inherent to that you just kind of like, okay, well, you pushed me this far and now you're earning the wrath of the Time Lords and this is how it goes.
So when that first aired, I was sure that must have been from the book. It just seemed so weirdly. You're right. In retrospect, looking back from Waters of the Mars, like you can get here's a Time Lord victorious moment. Like he's the only one, so he has to mete out the punishment of the Time Lords as well. Like you get it. But like at the time, it seemed so weird. I was like, wow, was that it? I just always assumed that was in the novelization, and it's not. Mm-hmm. Weird enough.
So what happens? He just lets them die. Is that what happens? It's like Blade Runner moment?
One of them is captured. I think the other one gets away. By the way, first of all, in the book, he's not doing this out of necessity. He's doing this because Bernice Summerfield, his companion in the books, has just lost her boyfriend, and he wants to understand what it's like. So he's doing it voluntarily, and the family that is pursuing him were the ones who did the human modification on him. So they're realizing that, oh, hey, wait a minute, we just did a modification on a Time Lord, like let's pursue him, right? So that's but there's this whole kind of dark thing that maybe the show needed as well, where you see the result of what would happen if they succeed, if the evil plot succeeds, if you will, to get to one of our four questions a little bit early. And you see them take it because you realize that each one of them can create six other people before they die, and each of those six people, if they're Time Lords, can then regenerate 12 times and create six people in each of those regenerations. So they create this whole army, and the army ends up slaughtering Romana in this vision of the future. Like, it gets really dark. So it's super weird that the show, in the show, RTD went darker for the ending, where he'd been sort of pulling his punches all the way throughout. And you've got to wonder if that was deliberate. And he was like, oh, you think this is a kind of sanitized TV version of human nature? Well, take this.
And it's interesting too, about how, his reaction after he does all that is he goes in and just, kind of acts like, hey, nothing happened there, Joan. Why don't you come traveling with me? We'll have fun. We can try. You know, he thinks that he can just do that and then just be happy-go-lucky doctor, and we can all go off and have adventures together. And there's that killer moment where he goes, if you'd never decided to come here today, would anyone have died?
Yes.
And just shuts him down. Got just the icy look on her face as she looks at him, and he realizes, ooh, I'll just go now. Yes. You know?
And then another killer moment in that same scene where he shuts her down romantically. Mm-hmm. Where he's like, Would you change? She wants him to change back.
Yeah.
And like without a shred of sympathy or doubt for a second, he's like, nope.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. Sorry, that guy's dead.
Mm-hmm. He's very alien in that scene. Mm-hmm. And it's a little weird, but given how he's been treating Martha the whole season, it's not, I think there's obviously some echoes of that going on here. Like, he still feels a connection to Joan. He doesn't really understand the journey she's on, but I like the bold choice there, because it sort of makes us not really like him as much. You know, we already didn't like him. Well, like, we already kind of like weirded out by the whole torturing the family thing. And, you know, this is definitely one of those episodes that the perform, and really huge credit to Tennant in this. Oh, I mean, like, he is so good as Smith and the Doctor, and just finding the differences there in the script, and like this final scene I see sort of as a capstone to the whole thing, because yes, we like the Doctor. Yes, he's our hero, but he's not human, and he can be very alien, you know, and certainly that can be funny, and here it can be very sort of dramatic and sort of a reminder of what he protects but can never really be.
It is a bit of a whiplash to go then at the end from that kind of Time Lord Victorious moment, that kind of cruel and cowardly moment, to, oh, the Doctor's gone forward to see Tim at the other end of his life, and oh, look, he's wearing a poppy, so he must be a nice guy. Like, it just feels a bit like they're trying to sanitize him at the end.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the other heart sort of coming back around. They're trying to sort of do the dual themes with the war and the boys, and then the more personal story with Tennant and the Doctor and how he treats Joan, that whole storyline. Did you need it? I don't know. I honestly forgot about that, that final scene. I did remember the stuff he said to Joan. That really stays with you as a Doctor Who fan. I think I would think that maybe casual fans might remember them a little more equally, but I had completely forgotten the poppy scene when I saw it. I was like, oh yeah, there's this thing too.
So I wanted to ask you guys a couple of things, given that you both know classic Who better than I do, I would guess. John Smith, when does the Doctor first use the pseudonym John Smith? Is it Troughton?
It is Troughton. Yeah. Jamie spots John Smith on the name of some medical equipment on board the wheel in the Wheel in Space. And the Doctor's passed out because Patrick Troughton had a holiday in episode two, and he wakes up in the hospital and says, who are you? Oh, it's, his name is, John Smith. Cause Jamie sees the name of the thing on there. And that's where the whole thing springs up. And then they use it again. And that's, I mean, you use it once, fine. But then when they start using it again, I'm trying to remember when the second time was. It's certainly at the end of Spearhead from Space. You know, the Brigadier goes to the Doctor, I just realized I don't even know your name. Smith, the Doctor John Smith. And that was like, that sort of cements it in the form of moving picture Who, because we don't actually see the John Smith mention in episode two of the Wheel in Space, because it doesn't exist.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'd never seen the wheel in space,
we,
actually.
Have we ever established that whoever's pack that was, you know, the original Dr. John Smith, is it an Aurora Boris kind of thing where that's actually the Doctor himself kind of in the future?
he planted that in the future. Yeah. He invents this medical equipment perhaps at his time in unit, and it gets transported to the space wheel in the fantastic space year of 2000, which is probably when that episode takes place.
If that scene isn't in Big Finish somewhere, I'd be very surprised.
Well, I definitely know where I'm going to place the Clara Splinter in that episode. So when we get there,
right?
But yeah, speaking of books that are very crucial to the plot, the Journal of Impossible Things in here, I've got to first of all credit. Just such a great idea and such a great prop. You know, like all those drawings, I'm sorry, I wrote down the artist's name. I just want to make sure they're properly credited. Kellyanne Walker did the illustrations for the prop Journal of the Impossible. And they are perfect because they look like drawings. They look, you know, like just doodles that someone's done, but they are so good. And the feeling that I got, and I'd be curious how you guys felt, especially you, Stephen, upon the very first time you saw it and you saw Paul McGann's face, like the very first real acknowledgement in the series that that doctor, that TV movie was canon. Yeah. It was just like, oh, like I was just like, I remember the first time, oh my God, they're not ignoring it. It's part of, it's instantly canon. He's there. He's the doctor.
Yeah. It was the first time any of the classic doctors had any visual representation in modern Who.
Right.
It's so fascinating that we fans were so insecure that they were just, you know, they might be erasing everything that came before. Because, you know, when the show came back in 2005, they never mentioned Gallifrey. They never mentioned Davros. They were very careful about doling out too much background information for new viewers who had never seen the original show. And that was the perfect approach. And then you would sort of very gradually get it in. Gallifrey gets in, what, Runaway Bride, I think it's the first time.
Yes.
We hear that.
School Reunion is a big turning point.
Though. It is a big turning point.
I feel like that does like a lot of confirmation that this that was a continuation, but it still left a big question mark over the 1996 movie because it was, you know, was it real? Did it happen? Didn't it?
The and there he is. Thing, right? Yeah. That left a lot of question marks above people's heads
and on their collars.
And on the comments about the canonicity of that, the question mark umbrella, by the way, plays a big role in the novel. It's a bit weird. it's kind of what helps the Doctor awaken to himself. But yeah, it's interesting sort of casting your mind back to that time, isn't it? 2007. I mean, I remember I was reading, was it Outpost Gallifrey? They had all of the reviews, and it was an exercise in watching classic Who fans like tear down an episode that you were like, oh, I thought that was okay. Or, no, at first you were like, no, they're right about that. They're right about, well, I thought that one was okay. And surely you can't hate this one, but they would just tear it down. And with this one, the Outpost Gallifrey fans, like they really leaned into like, this is nowhere near as good as the book. What is even happening? But what was interesting was that I feel like Outpost Gallifrey went offline like the next before Blink, because I remember being like, okay, how can you say anything about Blink? And then like the site crashed, I went up, you know, got bored or don't even know what happened to it. But I remember that was very much the feeling around this season, right? That human nature was the big one. It was one everyone was looking forward to, and like it mattered so much for how Classic Who fans viewed the show. And now it almost feels like it's, you know, when we look at the end of that season, obviously we see Blink, you know, the Master Trilogy kind of just, you know, it's and of course it is set up by this in a lot of ways. But like this is human nature. I don't want to say it's forgotten, but it certainly doesn't loom as large as it did when it screened, does it?
It is kind of a little bit ignored in a way, isn't it? You're right, because Blink certainly got the big... plaudits as it should. It's very good. I mean, they did do a
at the end of a very good, like squeezed in between some very good
stuff
there.
They did choose this one as like during the pandemic lockdown in 2020. This is one of the watch-alongs that they had. Paul Cornell was when Twitter was still a thing, was tweeting along with it and yeah. everything there. So I think there were some
stories as yeah. well that sort yeah. of talked about the that there were postquels. You know, it talked about the family of blood, like what happened next and how mm-hmm. the girl got out of the mirror and all of that. So
right,
yeah. A chance to clean it up. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely top 20, right, in the Doctor Who magazine mm-hmm. polls, but it's also slid down a little bit, you know. And I don't think that's necessarily saying anything bad about Human Nature. I think that's saying a lot of good things about the rest of New Who.
Mm-hmm.
That this has kind of faded into the background. But yeah, not an outcome we ever would have expected.
No, I think I would place it up there as the top of the whole series, that series three, that Dis and Blink, I think, because, you know, wow. not to go far off topic, but I liked Utopia, but I thought the three-parter got worse and worse as it went along. And so I feel like this and Blink were like, oh, wow, what a triple shot of amazing Doctor Who we had there.
So can I just say on a personal note why the reveal of Utopia was so satisfying for me? The fact that the Master is mm-hmm. using a pocket watch, it's because of the hymn that they use here in Human Nature. He who would valiant be, mm-hmm. also known as To Be a Pilgrim, and it's the song that the boys are singing at the start. It also plays over the machine gun bits.
Yeah.
I used to sing that in school because I went to a Church of England really? School, which is not, it's not the big deal that it would be in the US. Like it's, you know, my atheist father was perfectly happy sending me to a Church of England school because it's Church of England. Like they're not,
right.
they're barely even Unitarians, you know, they're mm-hmm. just, you mouth a few hymns and then go have cake with a vicar, you know, it's the right. idea of a cake or death thing. But also like I would hate singing hymns. And the only hymn I enjoyed singing was this one. Because the opening lines are, he who would valiant be against all disaster, let him in constancy follow the Master. And as a young Doctor Who fan, I was like, they're following the Master. Oh my right. goodness. Like head cannon erupting from just that one hymn, you know, because you latch onto anything in that boring environment.
Right.
But here it is, arguably at the beginning of Human Nature, a spoiler. Because here is he who would valiant be against all disaster. And he's following the Master in terms of trapping himself in a pocket watch.
The nice. Wow.
So, yeah. Bit of a convoluted spoiler, right? Nonetheless,
curious to go into like message boards around the time if there was like one lone fan, guys. I think the Master is coming in this season. It's just, you know, it's right there.
Or perhaps they thought, you know what, guys, I'm thinking about, oh, I don't know, 20 years time, almost 15 years time, they're going to use a pocket watch again. Because of course, when Joe Martin's doctor in Fugitive of the Dadoon uses, mm-hmm. you know, smashes the glass, and then later on towards the end of Flux, the doctor drops another pocket watch. It's amazing the legacy of this story now when you think about it, about how the pocket watch has become like the de facto thing for hidden Time Lord consciousness in an object. It was in Utopia, it was in in Flux.
To the point where you kind of want it to be a mislead next. Like it's just, here's the watch. And it's like, not just a watch. No.
RTD, if you're listening, like have Shooty pick up a pocket watch and be like,
exactly. And have it be the digital one that Sylvester McCoy had in Silver Nemesis. And it's just, it's just my digital pocket watch that I had. You know?
I love it. So it's especially weird. And you know, this classic Doctor Who canon on the back of a napkin stuff, the fact that it wasn't a pocket watch in the book or in the show up until very late in the day, it was going to be a cricket ball. But first of all, you've got the doctor throwing the cricket ball in that scene where he shows
the piano.
To save the baby carriage from the piano. And it's very, very Four to Doomsday moment, right? If I remember my Davison throwing.
Well done.
but they were like, it can't. Finally, RTD realized, no, you can't have it be a cricket ball that the doctor's personality is embedded in, even though it's called the pod in the book, and it looks like a cricket ball, and it gets confused for a cricket ball with hilarious consequences. But it needs to be something that you can open, right? You need to have to take the decision to stop being John Smith as the doctor. You need to open it. So it needed that mechanism. And that's when they thought, of course, pocket watch. Yeah. And it was just, it's one of those things so obvious in retrospect, but they were just making it up as they went along.
So let's talk a little bit about Martha in this story and how she sort of copes with things and what sort of good scenes and not so good scenes she gets. So first, I think this is a good depiction, actually a good way to handle sort of contemporary racism.
Yes.
In an adventure without making it the focus. I thought it was very sort of well done by having, you know, there's the comment from one of the kids at the beginning. And then there's just sort of the overall attitude toward her that is, you know, obviously distasteful, but it never gets so ugly that it becomes the focus, even though they could have easily done that. So I thought it was a very smart way to do it in this episode.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, you establish it. Oh, I see. So it's only bad people that are racist. You know, it, like you say, Hutchinson is saying, you know, how do you get the floor clean, you know, with hands like those and everything. And Martha just sort of grins and bears, like the poor woman's probably had to do a lot of her life, especially in 1913. But what makes it powerful then is when Martha thinks that she's seen like a spaceship or something when they're outside. And then John Smith is just so condescending. Oh, Martha, these are what are called stories. And that's a meteorite. And then later on, when Joan, you know, who's been very upstanding up until then, and she says, it's just a matter of fact, somebody of your station or your color wouldn't be, you know, allowed to be a doctor. It's like just matter of factly. And it's that was just the prevailing attitude at the time.
It was in the air. It was in the air. But I love that she gets a moment. Her moment about pointing at the bones of the hand, I think, is perfect. Because she names all of them. And the retort, like, you read that in a book, like, her comeback is perfect. Because it's like, yeah, to study for my exams. Like, there's literally no other reason anyone would know that. Like, it's just, you're wrong. And it's so obvious. She gets to have that little triumphant bit of dialogue, which was nice.
It's definitely interesting looking at it back now in a time where I think more of us are aware of systemic racism. And this is exactly what Human Nature, Family of Blood is showing. And it is interesting that the one character who gets to be not racist is that the maid who is down on her knees next to Martha, Jenny, who says something like, oh, I wouldn't have expected someone like you to have been here. And Martha looks at, like, preparing for a racist comment.
Yeah.
And Jenny says, you know, from London. And it's so nice. It's like a, you know, you're sort of pre-prepared for, like, okay, every racist comment in this is going to be counteracted in some way.
Yeah.
But it's also nice that they gave it to the one person you wouldn't necessarily expect it to have that attitude.
Mm.
So Martha also gets to obviously run around, get the plot going. She's spent, seems like, half of the second episode looking for the pocket watch by ransacking big parts of the school. She also has to at some one point essentially confess her love for the doctor. I don't know if she has to, but she does. And arguably this whole thing is a little bit of shining a light on that sort of relationship, and that she sort of has obviously feelings for the doctor. He doesn't, but he's still fond of her. And he has a whole video where he records 23 things for her to remember.
Have you guys seen the deleted scene where they just show everything that Tennant was talking about?
It's referenced in Peter Capaldi's final speech in Twice Upon a Time, never eat pears, because that's what David Tennant says in this, the deleted thing there. Yeah.
And it's from the book. Like, Tennant's that much of a nerd that he's just, even when he's extemporizing, he's doing the instructions that are written in the book. It's if you could imagine that in the voice of Sylvester McCoy, like, he's saying, oh, don't let me eat pears. Dreadful things. I don't want to be waking up with those in my, you know, and he leaves this actually on a written list of instructions for Bernie Sunfield, which she keeps pulling out throughout the story. And actually, hilariously, at the end, you see when she shows it to him, when she's trying to convince John Smith to be the doctor again, scribbled on the bottom in a different hand is don't fall in love. Because she, like Martha, is like, you didn't give me any instructions for this.
Right.
And he's like, did I really write that? Yeah. Your handwriting changed. It was really weird. There is a line from the book of Human Nature talking about pears all the way through to Capaldi saying never eat pears, and it runs through David Tennant, and it's magical that this happens. I love it when this happens in Doctor Who. What do you guys think about
why does that Why does that carry over from doctor to doctor that he just hates? Fish fingers and custard, just 11, but yep. The pear thing, it's everybody.
Once again, I think Shushi should eat a pear at some point.
First thing he does, jump on a pear.
I always feel like it's. I love pears. I always feel it's very unfair to pears. Yeah. But what do you guys think about the fact that a thing that kept recurring to me when I was watching it this time was there is very little that could not have been done in Classic Who. Like, if this had been a Classic Who story, mm-hmm. you wouldn't have had to change much. And in fact, that's kind of why I like the Scarecrows, because they feel Classic Who villainish to me.
Yeah.
Right.
Easily something you could have done in the Classic era.
There's an inside invisible spaceship. Mm-hmm. I remember Tom Baker always saying, you know, Douglas Adams thought he had a great idea, you know, but to build an invisible spaceship because it's the cheapest thing you could possibly build, as they did in Shada, which they would have done if they finished it. It finally comes to fruition here. This invisible spaceship makes perfect sense. Yeah, you could have done this.
The one thing I would miss are those fisheye lens shots of Bane's. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which I thought are great. They shoot him at weird angles. They just, because he's got a weird face already, that actor, and it's like,
oh my God.
It makes him just look crazy alien with that nose sniffing and the.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I would miss in Classico.
That's true.
But otherwise, you're dead on.
Yeah,
absolutely. Even the effect. Right. I love how simplistic the effect is when they're sort of like, you know, talking to each other across distances or like accessing like knowledge from bases. It's just this green light. They just sort of step up. And there's a green light. Yeah. And there's even a moment when sister of mine or mother of mine rather is standing there and just like all of a sudden you just see there's a green light going up there. And they're like,
yes,
it's so creepy. And like, if they were to make that today, it would probably seem some weird CGs thing or something, but no, it's a green light bulb just shining up on their face. And it's perfect. It's perfect.
I love it. And it really makes you think actually the Classic Who shouldn't have had much of a makeup budget, like all of the masks.
Right.
Just spend all that money on just pay the scriptwriter. You know, you could have had Human Nature,
right?
In the Classic Who, like it could have. There's nothing stopping a story this good.
Well, the question of whether or not Human Nature could be a Classic Who episode has been answered, but there are some other questions we must answer, and those are, of course, the four questions to Doomsday. First question: why did the randomizer take us here? What do you think, Chris?
Well, I mean, we've mentioned the Armistice Day, Veterans Day connection, the fact that it's going out there, and like the randomizer is now in charge of your seasonal programming. The dance is also, I don't think we got to mention this, the dance. The doctor takes, or that John Smith takes Joan to, we see on the flyer that it's November the 11th, 1913, which, if you're listening to this on November 11th, 2023, is 110 years ago.
To the day.
Yep.
To the day from that dance where the doctor learned to waltz or discovered that he could waltz, even when he didn't have his memories.
Case closed.
I will also say there's a disintegration connection. Remember, we were talking about the Day of the Daleks special effects.
Which I would argue are better than the ones here. Like, I love if you've listened to the last podcast, I was raving about the CGI version of Day of the Daleks, and the disintegration effects are so good because they have the beams, but only the beams, they blow apart the people, basically, that get disintegrated. Here, they just kind of fade away when they're shot. I feel like the CGI Day of the Daleks actually has better disintegration effects than Human Nature.
which would make sense, right? Because it was later, I think it was like
2011, I think. But yeah, around that time,
So yeah, CGI had evolved in leaps and bounds. There's one more thing I'll say, which, and it brings me back to Baines, who I really just wanted to give a shout out to that actor, because I didn't know, like he's such a chameleon. Like not only does he play two roles in this, he's in Game of Thrones. He was Viserys, and I did not recognize him. He was, you know,
under a blonde wig.
Yes, he was Daenerys's older brother, and my goodness, he was obnoxious in that too. But here, it's not only a different quality of obnoxious, but like he is the one who sort of gets to throw back in the headmaster's face what all his militarism means.
Yeah,
right. what a beautiful scene. I mean, there are villains who are just villainous, and then there are villains who get to speak the truth, like they're in the jester role. And that's kind of what Baines is. And I feel like this, you know, that's in this particular Armistice Day with the world situation as grave as it is, to quote Day of the Daleks. Yeah, that's a lesson. We need to hear, see, and read this lesson over and over again. Do not send boys off to war. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what happens. This is the cost. This is what it's like.
All for sure.
Honor and glory will matter nothing.
Well, I can't top that in terms of randomizer reasoning. So I'm just going to, well, we're going to leave it there and moving on to the second question. What if the evil plot had succeeded? Okay. So what I like to do with these is always try to think of the thing closest to the end that you can change where the bad guys come out on top. And it seems to me it would be John Smith not being brave enough to open the watch and just giving it to the Plantly. Mm-hmm. And they do, and they take it, and they become immortal. And in the words of Joan, those creatures would live forever to breed and conquer for war across the stars for every child. So that's what we would have.
But maybe they would look kindly on Earth, and maybe the Doctor would actually get to live out the rest of his life as John Smith. By the way, did you know, I didn't realize this, but apparently it's in the script that the year that he actually dies in that flash forward where we see his and Joan's life together, 1963.
I didn't know that.
Very also, cool.
We should briefly mention the mother being Verity. Father being Sidney, obviously reference Sidney Newman married Lambert. In the book, Verity was his wife. So they changed that a little bit. And there's a Doctor Who Confidential where RTD sort of sounds like he's the one who did the homage to Verity.
Sounds like him.
No, you think you just took it from the book, didn't you?
Right.
But yeah.
So yeah, Steve, if the family becomes immortal. And it's just, you know, like this is such a tight story. You never really learn quite enough about the family to know what that would be, right? Because of these spheres, and they have a ship, but they have a race, they have a people, do they have ambitions beyond just living forever? We don't really know. Mm-hmm. But assuming they do they sort of become the new Time Lords? And now, if you put this in the context of the season arc and what was happening, right? So Saxon, it's already established Saxon is a prime minister. And so that implies at some point, like the TARDIS is still there. Does Martha somehow end up going to the end of the universe with or without Jack, recruits the master somehow, and then they end up going to war with the family? So, you know, like conquering the universe is his thing. He doesn't want these people in on his scene.
And he's got the Toclophane on his side already.
Yeah,
I guess. Although that wouldn't happen if he didn't have the TARDIS. So Saxon is immediately time locked, I think.
That's true.
Yeah. If the Master can't get back from the end of time, then none of the rest would happen. So I don't know. Well, here's what I can say. Okay, Stephen, I want to hear your take first, because I'm going to say what happens in the book, which you touched on a little bit. But given what you know from the show,
right,
what would you assume happens if the evil plot succeeds?
Well, they probably would have left Earth because they were bored with it, I reckon. But it would have probably just gone off and been time jerks in other parts of history. And I don't think they would have given Earth a second thought. Maybe they give it a glancing blow as they leave orbit or something like that. But I don't think they pay it any mind. I think it was just a launching ground, because that's where the Doctor wound up. So that's why they went there. Mm-hmm. So that's my guess.
That they'll be doing a good enough job of slaughtering each other,
Honestly, they had a pretty good familiar relationship. I was impressed by that. Maybe once power got hold of them, maybe they would be a little more sniping around the dinner table.
Oh, yeah, I meant the Earth people.
You meant the family of blood. Yeah, or maybe perhaps since they weren't indestructible, maybe this is, oh well, we'll get our ship ready, and in about 6 or 7 months we can get ready, and then of course they probably take a stray bullet in the opening rounds of World War I, and they actually die on a battlefield somewhere in Belgium, and that's what happens to the family blood, and their reign of terror actually ends just shortly after it would have done anyway.
So this is definitely the segment where we find out how little detail there was in the show compared to the book. In the book, it is made quite clear that this is a group of shape-shifting aliens who Orbitides was their name.
Right.
Really not that. Easy to remember. They can take any human form. There's one called Green Eye, who I sort of think is supposed to be the Bane's one, who does like to have sex with all his victims first. So, yeah,
new adventures, really, baby.
That's, seriously. They do, as I mentioned, there's this scene where we flash forward to Gallifrey and they're executing Romana and they're also executing Livia. I think, and you know, it's sort of a scene in the ruins of Gallifrey. We fast forward and see that they've taken the Time Lords because they are this, they cannot extend beyond six in a family. They cannot pod more often than that. That's how they reproduce. They're pod people, and so Time Lord pod people basically
they take over.
You end up conquering the galaxy.
It's like a pre-Time War.
Very much so, yes. Ooh, would that be pre-Time War? Yeah. God even knows how it would fit into continuity. My goodness.
All right. Well, many answers to that question. And we will move on, though, to the third question, which, of course, is, where is the Clara Splinter? Clara Oswald, of course, splintered in time at the end of The Name of the Doctor. She is somewhere in every single Doctor Who story. What is she doing in Human Nature and the Family of Blood?
She's at the dance because Clara loves a good dance, I think. And so she's in sort of the background, sort of hovering around, dancing with some local who thinks he's going to... get advance, perhaps, as far as a second
going to
date
have
with
a
her.
New adventure. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. But Clara knows that no, this is I'm just keeping an eye on someone who's keeping an eye on the Doctor in the background. That's my guess.
Well, because Martha could easily fail in that scene, right? Or or the Doctor could fail and blurt out too quickly, like which one he wants the Family of Blood to shoot. You know, between Martha and Joan.
Clara answers the question that we've all had ever since this episode was broadcast, which is, where did that little girl get her balloon? She's selling balloons. There she is. And she's selling safe balloons because back then they would have been filled with hydrogen, not helium. But Clara, splintered in time, knows this and is all like, you know what? That's got to be a helium balloon. Because, the Doctor's got enough problems.
Right.
He doesn't want to worry about a balloon exploding.
I've seen the Hindenburg in one of my other splinters, so I know the damage of that.
Exactly.
She may also be a scarecrow who's kind of teaching all the other scarecrows to walk in that weird way. It means that they're actually slower at crucial moments than they might otherwise have been.
There you go.
But also, I've got to say, this is nothing against... Jessica Hines, who's fantastic in the role of Joan, but she's specifically described in the story as quite plain looking, quite ordinary. Bernice Summerfield's sort of actually quite surprised that the Doctor is falling for this woman. And I think that's sort of the intention of the show, right? They haven't tried to, they've not given her any makeup. Mm-hmm. Like the intention, she's a little bit plain, but the Doctor falls for her anyway, right? When he looks like a David Tennant, he's just clearly, and it's kind of sweet. It's sweet that they have a romance. But I think that maybe Clara, her hand is at work here as well, and she's making sure that Joan is not too attractive.
Not just physically.
Like she's the friend who's sort of whispering racist ideas in her ear.
Makeover for both her appearance and her personality.
Because if the crux point is John Smith not wanting to open the pocket watch, you've really got to do everything you can to make her like, and if he's got this powerful attraction to her, like, love that will transcend barriers, anything you can do to kind of switch his decision in that moment, right? Just make her a little bit more plain or say things the wrong way. I don't know what the coaching that Clara is going to give her there, but like, clearly it was enough for him to just decide, okay, I guess, you know, the survival of the galaxy is more important than my affection for this woman.
Mm-hmm. There we go. She's either at the dance, selling balloons, or part of Joan's book club.
Or all three.
Could be all three, actually. Yeah. That's not bad.
Triple duty, yeah. Has to work three jobs to survive in this economy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys, it's time to move on to the final question, the ultimate question, the only question that matters for human nature and the family of blood. What did we think of this story? The Pulte Open rating system, of course, has six ratings. Got to do that on two hands. There's the Dalek, which we give to a good episode of Doctor Who. The Ogron, which we give to a bad episode of Doctor Who. The Professor Hayter, which we give to a not-so-good episode of Doctor Who, but hey, at least they tried something. The Viscount Banger, which we reserve for the best of the best. The Fixed Point in Time, which we give to a story that is beyond rating. We usually can't rate it for reasons of nostalgia, but sometimes for other reasons. And the Lady Cassandra, which is a paper-thin plot, but it looks good, especially if you give it a little moisturizing. So first, Stephen, read that back for me.
Pay attention, boy.
What's the rating? Why don't we go first, Chris, right? And I, and then you can basically be either the tiebreaker or the having your own rating.
Sure.
Having your the arm's length further out thing. Chris, go ahead. Go for it. What's your rating?
All right. Well, I don't think there's any question here of what this is. A rewatch has not withered it. Age shall not, whatever. No, human nature is just as good as it was first broadcast. You have to be a really picky fan to say that the book was substantially better. I think after having done both, I can say that it's about 50-50 in terms of which one is like pocket watch better than cricket ball, but like a lot of stuff in the book, like, you know, future vision of Time Lords better than not understanding what Family of Blood's true goal is, right? So it kind of balances out in the end. And for a TV show adaptation of a book, that is phenomenal. The fact that it gets even close, I mean, of course, helps having the original author there to rewrite it, and RTD, one of the best script writers in TV history, to edit it and not settle for anything less than brilliant. So yeah, I thought this was top notch when I first saw it. My opinion hasn't changed. If anything, it's got a little bit better. This is a Viscount banger through and through.
One banger in. All right. Well, I'm going to tell first what my family thought of it. They loved it. So my kids both watched this with me.
They were daughter of mine and son of mine.
Exactly. So David Tennant is Grace's favorite doctor. Grace is my daughter. She's 10. She really liked seeing him play John Smith. She was kind of riveted throughout and sort of on, you know, as you're supposed to be on the, when is he going to become the doctor? She was just constantly thinking that. And, at the end of the first, episode at the cliffhanger, Jack just remarked how much he loved the storytelling of this era. He's like, oh man, these Doctor Who's from this time. He was just like, you know, he's not a fan of the 13th Doctor, blah, 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 whatever. We don't have to get into that. But he just was immediately like, he just loved watching these old Doctor Who's from this time. And as soon as we'd finished the second one, he just said, hot take, Viscount banger. Completely agree with him. It's totally a banger. It's like the villains, like the suspense. I mean, Tennant's performance, I honestly, we started to rave about it. I don't think we raved about it enough. The way he just really plays John Smith differently, to the point where he has one line when he sort of forgets himself for a minute with when he's holding the watch, and he sounds so different. Like he has that one little bit, and you're just like, you just suddenly realize how much he was not playing the doctor the whole time.
Yeah.
So good. And who could I ever forget that final scene with Joan? Like, just powerful. Total banger.
Absolutely. You know what? Before we get to Stephen's rating, I'll just say that what you said about Grace reminded me that Paul Cornell said one of the inspirations for this was Superman 2. Decides to go human for the love of Lois Lane.
Mm-hmm.
And Superman 2, I don't know about you guys, when I first saw that, I was traumatized.
Hmm.
at the very idea that Superman could choose to make himself not human. So
we're not Superman.
I could see that aspect being very, very scary to a fan of the Doctor. So I'm glad that she enjoyed it regardless.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Steven, what do you got?
Make it unanimous, Viscount Banger. I was going to applaud David. I feel like this is, I liked David Tennant. I think I've liked Matt Smith and Peter Capaldi a little more. This is a little closer to my you know, feelings of what a doctor should be to me anyway. But I feel like, especially in watching an episode a day as I was doing earlier this year, he's good. He's good as the doctor. He is human as the doctor. But then when you finally get sort of the difference between what a human David Tennant would be and then what the doctor would be, as you were mentioning, Pete, when that one scene where he just drops into doctor mode and you realize how much you miss that doctor at that moment, just like Martha sort of like, oh, he's there, you know, we could tell he's there. And he's great. And I love his series 4 performance. I think there's some of his best work is in that, you know, there's some great scenes in The Doctor's Daughter, which is not a good episode, but he is fabulous in it. And all throughout with Catherine Tate. So, and I feel like that the really great actor of his generation, which I think David Tennant is certainly up there, sort of begins with this episode. I think he really shows off his acting chops without having it be a showy performance. It's, you know, a very sensitive performance when he's John Smith and then he's Doctor Who, and it is two separate characters, but both equally compelling. And I think his performance is just the icing on the cake in a very good episode.
Nice.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
And you know, only our second triple banger in Pull to Open history.
Wow.
The only other one being The Day of the Doctor, which is almost, I'm thinking, 2 years to the day almost. Mm-hmm. I'll have to check when we actually did that one.
And of course, because we now have ranking as well as rating, I could say that this automatically drops Human Nature, Family of Blood into the top 12. It will be no lower than Fugitive of the Jadoon when we do our next ratings, as we just did in our top 100. Go check out that episode. Also, go check out our episode on the best actors to play Doctor Who, because we did not give Tennant the nod in that. I think because we were looking at like how they performed as the Doctor, right? And that's like, you're absolutely right. He is great in the role of John Smith here. And that's like, maybe the first time you see him really stretching himself. And I think he would do a lot more in season 4, and culminating in playing another human version of the Doctor, right?
Yep.
The Metacrisis Doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, you can say that this was practice for that. But my goodness, does he knock it out of the park here, and may want to revisit our best actors.
We might need to do it. All right. There it is, folks. We're going to close the cover on this epic tale. And now we need to head into our own time machine and activate the randomizer. So the randomizer, of course, consists of two parts. First is the codex, which I have in front of me. It is a spreadsheet that you can find a link to in the show notes with every single episode of Doctor Who on it. And the random element that we add to the codex, which someone must helm, is also known as the executor. That's okay. We got someone here.
Would you like to take the helm of random.org for the purposes of deciding our next story? Would you like to see where we're?
I would be honored. Let's do it.
Get your hand on that baby. So at random.org uses, as of course, as all Pull to Open fans know, atmospheric noise to simulate true randomness, much better than a computer. So it could be messages from the doctor. We're not sure. We're still looking into that. But as soon as I knock off Human Nature and the Family of Blood, we can spin the wheel, but we like to challenge the randomizer too.
Well, first, many stories do we have left, Pete?
Would be, now that I've knocked it off, 200 even.
200! We've done it! People, there are only 200 stories in Doctor Who for Paul to open, left to watch. I'm sure that they are not going to mess this up by releasing any new ones anytime soon. We're good. We will not dip back over the 200 point. We're going to dip under. It's hundreds all the way from here, baby. Or not.
Good stuff.
So Stephen, you're sitting at random.org with one as the min and 200 as the max?
200 at the max. All right.
Don't spin it yet. We got to challenge the randomizer. So, okay. Chris, you go ahead. Yeah. What's your deal? What do you want?
Ooh, wow. Well, you know, this really got me thinking about the whole question of, like, you know, the classic Doctor, the new Doctor romance. You know, that's very much what Paul Carnell was exploring in the book, like the fact that Doctor had never been allowed to have romance, obviously knew who changed that forever. But meanwhile, of course, you've got Paul McGann sticking his hand up from the TV movie and saying, hey, I kissed a companion first. So take us to something a little romantic as these dark nights draw in, cuffing season begins. Not necessarily the Doctor's romance. But maybe if you want to do Classic Who, randomize it, it's entirely up to you. Then take us something in Classic Who that maybe has more romance than we suspected.
Nice. That's good stuff. Romance. I'm going to go Alien. We saw Alien Doctor in this one towards the end there. And I'm kind of giving the randomizer an excuse to take us to Capaldi, its favorite doctor, I think, to just give us a little bit of more of that Alien Doctor taste. I like it.
Oh, Alien Doctor is your request. Okay.
Yeah. Steven, do you have a little something you want to ask the randomizer for?
Well, let me think about this. I'm just trying to think. So there's an actor in this who plays a tiny role. But he had a very, very large career leading up to this. I think I scrambled to get his name right. I was right.
Was it the headmaster?
No, it wasn't. It was the doorman saying, his name is Derek Smith. He had a long and storied career and died only recently. And he was very, you know, this was his first and only Doctor Who, obviously. And obviously at the end of a very, very prestigious career, he wasn't getting the best of roles, which is rather sad. He was in an episode of Blake 7, though, as I recall. He was the lead villain in a Blake 7 episode called Shadow, which also featured another person from Doctor Who, Adrian Burgess, who was in The Sunmakers. So I want that link to go, and I want if you haven't chosen it yet, I want The Sunmakers.
Love The Sunmakers, and there's some Time Lord victorious stuff in that one,
right?
Other Time Lords, but that would be pretty amazing. And by the way, I just want to congratulate you on the most Radio Free Scarrow-esque challenge to the randomizer you could have done.
Right?
I think you name-checked Blake 7, the random actors and connections. It's like I was listening to you guys banter all over again.
Right. Just how my mind works.
That's awesome. Okay.
Right. I will just mention, I predicted it. If we get taken to the TV movie, as I said at the top of the show, it's Edmonton's fault.
Okay. Usually is. So,
all right, Steven, I'm going to give you a countdown. Here we go. Okay. 4, 3, 2, 1.
Report. The number is 39.
39. We're in Classic. And we are at the three, count them, three Doctors.
Wow.
For the 60th. Like, we're going to be, I think this is going to be the thing we post that weekend, isn't it?
For the anniversary, yeah. It may be. Yeah.
Oh, my God, Steven. You did it.
I did it.
It's taken us from the 60th to the 10th anniversary. Wow. That's
incredible. What are the chances? Well, 1 in 200, obviously. Guys, this has been awesome. It's also been Pull to Open. It's a podcast. What are podcasts? Well, they're things you subscribe to in whatever app you are doing. Go ahead and do that for Pull to Open. Why don't you go ahead and do that for Radio Free Scarrow, too, if you haven't already? Yeah. You can subscribe to both of our podcasts on wherever you find podcasts, whether that's Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon Music, etc., etc. go find them. We're also on the YouTubes at youtube.com/pull to open. All the socials, which we mentioned before, were either Pull to Open 63 or Pull to Open. Thank you, Martin West, for our music. Steven, any final words or message, or just want to tell people where to find you online?
Well, I'm one of the three people at Radio Free Scaro. We've been going since before Human Nature Family of Blood was originally broadcast.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. And then we still have so much to talk about every single week in Doctor Who. I'm so happy to do a Doctor Who podcast. I'm really happy that Sequest DSV one didn't get off the ground. Otherwise, we would have canceled it after 15 weeks. anyway, it's a lot of fun to talk about Doctor Who every week, and it's a lot of fun to talk about to different people about Doctor Who every week. So thank you for having me on.
It was totally our pleasure. Thank you for coming. All right, folks, we are going to see you next time for a special episode of Pull to Open, where we might talk about a little inspiration, a comic book called The Star Beast, not the actual 60th anniversary special, The Star Beast, but I'm sure it'll come up. And then we're heading to the Three Doctors, the 10th anniversary on the 60th anniversary. Could never be better. Thanks for listening.
Omega.
We will see you soon.